thou not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy Lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants, and with grain and new wine have I sustained him. And what then shall I do for thee, my son? Right? Now, he had given the blessing that God had said would be his. Isaac trying to reverse that. And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Now, he shows a weakness here in the midst of the kind of an individual that he was. I want to turn to Hebrews and notice a statement here in Hebrews the 12th chapter and down about verse 14. Follow after peace with all men and the sanctification without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking carefully, lest there should be any man that falleth short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness spring up trouble by you, and thereby the many be defiled, lest there shall be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one mess of meat sold his own birthright. For ye know that even when he afterward desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for a change of mind in his father, though he sought it diligently with tears. Now you will notice that word "in his father" in the American Standard is in italics. That means it's not in the original. And so it seems to me, if I recall correctly, the King James indicates that he found no place for change with God. Is that correct? But at any rate, it isn't with God. It's with his father. Now look back here to this passage, verse 33, latter part. Yea, he shall be blessed. That is, the blessing that Isaac had bestowed upon Jacob could not be taken back. He shall be blessed. So that Esau found no place for a change in his father. But the father did give him a blessing. But he couldn't take back the one that he had given to Jacob. Now this is the point I want to know. This passage in Hebrews used to bother me a good deal about that. And I think the real reason was I was trying to make a wrong application of it. I was making the application that he couldn't find a change in God's mind. Wasn't God's mind. It was the mind of his father. For his father's the one who tried to get to change his mind. But the father said he shall be blessed. But the warning there would be to all of us in this man, the danger of a profane mind. Now, what is a profane person? Not necessarily one that curses, swears, uses bad language. Sometimes we think of that as it. No, it's a mind that lightly esteems that which is sacred or holy. Now that's what you see in Esau. An individual who puts a light estimate upon the birthright, upon that which was sacred, that which he should have considered holy and sacred unto himself. But he lightly esteemed it. Same thing would be true today of an individual who lightly esteems his spiritual birthright and sells it for a mess of pottage. Then when he sought to change his own father's mind on the blessing, he couldn't do it. Now I want you to note the blessing that he bestows on Esau. It isn't a great deal different from the other. And really, it's not so much a blessing as it is a prophecy. It's more of a prophecy of what shall be. But now notice, Behold, of the fatness of the earth shall be thy dwelling, and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and thou shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt break loose, that thou shalt shake his yoke from off thy neck. So he didn't change that. He couldn't change it, because that was God's own will, that the younger should serve the elder. The elder should serve the younger in this case. So first of all, here, the fatness of the earth shall be thy dwelling, and of the dew of heaven from above. Now, that first, and by thy sword shalt thou live. You'll serve your brother. Now, when you shake off the yoke, the Edomites were conquered by David. David conquered the Edomites and forced them to pay homage. Later on, they broke that yoke. Later on, John Hyrcanus brought them under bondage again. But again, they broke that yoke by the Romans, and the last we know about of them was about the middle of the first century, somewhere around 50 to 70 A.D. They moved back out into the desert and were lost to history, completely lost. But here they were at war with the Israelites all through the history of the two nations, and finally were brought under subjection by David. They revolted under one of the kings, I forget which one, and then later on were brought back under again, and they'd break again. Here's the condition then, that which when you break loose, thou shalt shake his yoke from off thy neck. All right, now of course, now that leads to his hatred of his brother. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. So all the family thought that Jacob was about to die. Maybe because that Ishmael had died rather young. Maybe they thought the father was going to die rather young. I don't know. This one, because they were twins. That I don't know. And the words of Esau, her eldest son, were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her youngest son, and said unto him, behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, and arise, flee thou to Laban my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him a few days, until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be bereaved of you both in one day? That is, why should he kill you, and then that would separate him from us? Maybe somebody kill him. But I want you to note now Jacob's reward for this trickery. First of all, there is no account of his ever seeing his mother again. And those few days extended into at least 20 years before he came back into the land. And then some years after that, before the father died, and he and Esau buried the father Isaac, but no record of the mother being there. So, and apparently the two were very close, Rebekah and Jacob, very close. But he never saw her again. Then there was a second thing here from... for later on, he spent more than 20 years labor to Laban for his wives and what he got there. So here was hard labor ahead of him for what he would get, whereas here at home, he would probably, the family was wealthy, we know that. Then there was a third thing. Laban deceived him when he gave him Leah instead of Rachel. So the chickens did come home to roost, didn't they? Never saw his mother again, so far as we know. The few days extended into over 20 years of work for Laban, his father-in-law, for what he got out of it. And then third, he was deceived by him, and his deception came back upon him. I want to look at that in just a few moments. Seems like he remembered that when he was deceived. If there hadn't been something there, I think he'd have made a whole lot bigger issue out of what Laban did to him than he made. But here's the consciousness of what he had done. I think that helped. We'll look at that in just a moment. All right. And so never she said, I'll send for you, but she never did. And so he didn't get back. And Rebekah said to Isaac, this is really the beginning of chapter 28. And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? And Isaac called Jacob. Now this is before he leaves. So she's manipulating this thing to get Isaac to send Jacob to Padan Aram here. And she's going to send him. I'll send for you. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go. Now, no two imperatives. That is right. Up, go. to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. Right, now Bethuel, you see, was the father of Laban and Rebekah. And God Almighty bless thee. Now, as we had that word back in 17, in verse 1 and 2, when Jehovah appeared unto Abram and said, I am God Almighty. Walk thou before me and be thou perfect. That is God the strong one. Almighty means the broad-breasted one, hence indicating strength. God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a company of peoples, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land of thy sojournings, which God gave unto Abraham. Now notice here the blessing of Abraham. That's the real blessing, and that's renewed when Jacob comes to Bethel. That is the spiritual promise. Isaac hadn't mentioned that back here in the blessing at all. That is reserved for the 28th chapter a little later. And Isaac sent away Jacob, and he went to Paddan Aram unto Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's and Esau's mother. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take him a wife from thence. And that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And remember, Esau had two here, the daughters of Heth. And that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Paddan Aram. And Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father. And Esau went unto Ishmael. Now Ishmael was already dead himself. He went unto the tribe of Ishmael and took besides the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife. Well, God had rejected Ishmael, cast him out, so he really doesn't help the matter very much, does he, by marrying a daughter of Ishmael? No, although the last time we saw Ishmael, I pointed out that it seemed to me that Ishmael had a number of commendable traits about him. We don't find anything really against him, but his descendants, they were not all that good. Right? And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran, toward it on the direction, and lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took one of the stones of the place and put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep, or put it as a headpiece there, or put his head on it. Maybe it had a sheepskin or something over it. But now this is about 70 miles from Beersheba. Now Haran is a lot farther, about 500 miles from Beersheba. But Bethel, where he slept this particular night, about 70 miles. Now it doesn't say this is the first night. This could have been the second night, could have been the third night. He could have been just leisurely taking his time, that 20 miles a day, something like that, 21 or 2. And this could have been the third night, after 3 days' journey. We're just not told that. But at any rate, he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, Jehovah stood above it and said, I am Jehovah, the God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. I want you to note the three things. Here's the ladder. Here are the angels ascending and descending on it. And here's Jehovah at the top of it, the summit of it. Now Jehovah speaks here. He says, the land where, and renews the promise that God made Abraham. Now note the promise. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. Now there's the land promise, and the seed promise. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. Alright, now there's the land national promise that God made Abraham in Genesis 17, 1 and 2. I've noticed that two or three times, you recall. Now here's the second part of the promise, when God said, in thy seed, or in thee, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. That promise to Abraham was renewed with an oath in the 22nd chapter, verses 16 and 17, which I believe we had last time, or the time before last. Now notice he repeats now the spiritual promise. And in thee, and in thy seed, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. All right, now there is the land national promise. Here is the spiritual promise. Both now are renewed unto Jacob and given unto him. Now Isaac didn't give him that blessing. He blessed him in material prosperity and protection and would be over his brother and all that. But he doesn't give it. This is for God to give. Now then God gives it here. And behold, I am with thee and will keep thee whithersoever thou goest and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. All right, now there are three promises, the land and national promise, the spiritual promise, and protection. Our protection. I'll be with you. I'll bring you back to here. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, surely Jehovah is in this place, and I knew it not. Jehovah, as I've said several times, Jehovah and God. Jehovah is the God of mercy, the one who extends mercy, the covenant-keeping God. The word God indicates power, the deity of power. So here, Jehovah, the God of mercy, the covenant-keeping God, who keeps his covenant, who had made with Abraham and now repeats it to me. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. That word house of God, Bethel, means house of God. A little bit later, he calls it that. Calls it Bethel. Let me notice, if you have your New Testament, turn to John 1 and verse 51. I think Jesus has this very passage in mind here. Now you will notice here in this, here is the ladder extending to heaven. All right, now here is extending into heaven, and here is God in his heaven above this. Now here are the angels descending upon this ladder and ascending upon this ladder here, indicating here that this ladder symbolizes that the messengers or the message from God to man and from man to God. All right, now look at Jesus' statement here in John 1 and verse 51. And he said unto him, verily, verily I say unto you, you shall see the heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. In other words then, here now are these angels, but now what you're going to see is the Son of Man. Here is the Son of Man, and you see the angels ascending and descending upon him. He then becomes the ladder here from heaven to earth and from earth to heaven. The one over whom heaven's message will come to us, and I'll mess him. Now, I think this is a messianic statement. John 1:51, messianic because here in this one, statement here, when he says, in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed, that looks unto the Messiah, the messianic hope. Right? And here you see the angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man, the messenger's message from God to earth, from earth to heaven. Now in Hebrews 3 and verse 1, here the writer says of Christ here, wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of a heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession, even Jesus. Now, partaker of a heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession, even Jesus. Right now, here Jesus is the apostle from heaven to earth. He's the one that brings the message from God to man. Now then, and here he's the high priest, that is, consider the apostle and high priest, even Jesus Christ here. So as the apostle, he is God's messenger to man. As the high priest, he is man's messenger to God. So here is the Son of Man then, both as the apostle from God and the high priest from man, always God's message to us comes, and our message goes back to the Father. I think this is a very strong messianic symbol here in this, when he sees this ladder. And also, I think that Jesus so used it in John 1:51 as the ladder over which the angels, the messengers, or the messages from heaven to earth may come. Well, all right, you may give that some thought. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz at the first. Now this is about 12 miles north of Jerusalem, something like that. And so that'd make it about between 60 and 70 miles from Beersheba at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, now notice his vow. Sometimes men read this and say that Jacob here shows his disposition to make a deal with God. I doubt if that's so. I want to try to think as good of Jacob as I can. He got enough there to make us kind of look askance at him at times. So we're trying to see everything good about him we possibly can. Let's always try to do that, not only in Jacob, but in one another. Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, that's first. Second, and will keep me in this way that I go. Now third, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on. Now fourth, so that I come again to my father's house in peace. Fifth, and Jehovah will be my God. Then will I, this stone which I set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that thou wilt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Now, I think here, Jacob, rather than thinking about that, is trying to make a bargain with God. Let's try to think of Jacob here as expressing in this the things which he appreciates, the things that he really wants of God, that God will be with him, God will provide for him, God will bring him back, God will be his God. Then if you do that, if I'm brought back, then he says this pillar will surely be God's house. That is a place where he could offer worship unto God. When he came back, he later set up an altar there. Now I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Now that's the second time that we've had the tenth. Back when Abraham returned from the slaughter of those kings, he gave unto Melchizedek, the king of righteousness and priest of God Most High, a tenth of all. Now then, where did he learn that? The tenth belonged to Jehovah. Now then, Jacob said, I'll give him the tenth. Not a tenth, I'll give him the tenth unto thee. It seems to me that this indicates that somewhere back there, God has stipulated this as the amount that should go to him as worship, to support worship, or sustain worship, or however it might be used back there. Abraham offered it, Jacob promises it. But we're not under the tithe, and surely should never do less than the Jew did. All right, any question over what we've had now? Any question over this? Well, we're ready now to see Jacob get a little bit of what he dished out back yonder. Yes, ma'am. Fine. That's right. Yeah, that's what God meant that it should be unto him. Point I made was, they didn't have to go through all this deception and manipulate him to get it done. Faith on the part of Rebekah and Jacob, knowing what God had said to her when she was, they'd have known God was going to do that. But now they want to help God out. They want to get a little ahead of him here. And no, God was going to do that anyway. He doesn't have to have this deception to get the work done. And we don't have to try to help him out in the wrong way to get his work done. So often we affirm that the end justifies the means. And never so. The end never justifies the means unless the means are right. The means have to be what God provides. And so here in this, I think that the point I was trying to bring, yes, God was going to bring this about. It was God's intention all the time it should be Jacob and not Esau. Said that when they were born. But they want to help him out in this. Yes, sir. That's right. Norm, I think one of the strongest arguments for the fact that the Bible is the Word of God is the fact that God brought it through the Jews. Brought it through those people always in rebellion against Him, always trying to do it their way. Went into idolatry, all of that, and yet God brought His Messiah and His revelation of truth through that body of people. I think it's a strong argument for the fact that God was doing this work and the Bible is His book. Yes, ma'am. Yes, I think so. And that was what I was observing a while ago. That here's what He would like. If God would do this and this, I'll serve Him. I don't think He's making a bargain. As I said, I don't think He's making a bargain. Others think so. Sometimes we hear people think, oh, Jacob was here making a bargain with God. I don't think so. I think He has a desire to return, and maybe by now a consciousness that I've done wrong. I really think Jacob realized his wrongdoing. I think that comes out a little bit later here when he didn't, one minute stronger against Laban than he was. All right, let me look at this and get through this chapter. I've got one or two points. I want to go back and summarize if I may. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the children of the east. And he looked and behold a well in the field. Not in the city, but he's out here in the field. And lo, three flocks of sheep lying thereby. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and the stone upon the well's mouth was great. And thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. Probably this might have been rain water that was caught, I don't know, instead of living water. Don't know whether which it was. But you notice they're trying to protect the water, maybe from thieves, or maybe from animals getting into it somewhere, I don't know. Anyway, a heavy stone was kept upon it. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence are ye? And they said, of Haran are we. And he said unto them, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said unto them, is it well with him? And they said, it is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. Probably looked up and saw her coming. As a shepherd is here, taking care of the sheep. And said, lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go and feed them. In other words, Jacob here sees these fellows wasting time. Why don't you water them and go on and feed them? There's several more hours of feeding time here instead of waiting around for that. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together. And they rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we watered the sheep. Maybe these were lads. I don't know. Maybe the stone was too heavy for them. While he was yet speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. That is, she is a shepherdess, it literally means. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Now surely he introduced himself first, but the next one looks like he waited a minute to introduce him. But he wasn't losing any time there. So boy, well, if he's as old as they say he was, about time he found him a wife. Lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. Now notice, the old servant had found Rebecca, she ran and told her mother. But the mother of Rachel here is not mentioned here. And it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things, told him all about his journey, I guess, and everything, about his home and all that. And And Laban said to him, surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. I'm sure that Laban wanted to find out, because he didn't want an imposter coming around. And Jacob wants to impress him that he's not an imposter. And Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldst thou therefore serve me for naught, tell me, what shall be thy wages be? Probably Jacob had already impressed him as a good hard-working fellow. And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. Hebrew scholars say that word means a wild cow. I don't know, wild cow. And Rachel means ewe, ewe. So I don't know whether that had anything to do with the character of the girls or not. Wild cow and a ewe. The name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were tender. That is, they were rather dull, not the bright eyes that the Orientals like. Bright, sparkling eyes. Maybe, I don't know whether they were weak. This one says they were tender. That simply meant they were not sparkling, but maybe were kind of droopy. We've seen people kind of a droopy eye. Hurts their looks. And Leah's eyes were tender, but Rachel was beautiful. And well-favored, well-formed, it means. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Now the time comes to get married, and I think old Jacob began to get acquainted with old Laban pretty well now. Notice a little bit blunt. And Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may marry her. Literally is what he means, go in unto her or marry her. You know, he's rather blunt. Rather blunt, what I'm trying to say, rather blunt in this. Maybe he's come to realize that old Laban ought to already told him. Time is up, now we'll have the wedding, but he didn't. Want to get all out of him that he can. Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. Now, Leah, you can't respect her either for that. Of course, you can't respect old Laban at all. You can't have no respect for him. I don't have anything for Laban but contempt, and if it's right to have contempt for a man. Of course, the character of the fellow. He was a deceiver and all that, and wanted to beat him if he could. But Leah here concurred in this. Now, maybe she was figuring, now, here, I'm an old maid. I don't grab this chance. I won't get another chance. And so she goes right in with the plan, the plot here. And Laban gave Zilpah, his handmaid, unto his daughter Leah for a handmaid. And it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? Why have you deceived me like this? You realize this, that she was probably veiled. Whatever they said was no doubt in a whisper. And maybe the voices were similar. It would be she was veiled, and it would be in the dark of the tent. A number of things there. And he was not even thinking about being deceived and excited over getting married and all that. And Laban said, it is not so done in our place to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill the week of this one, and we will give thee the other also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. Now, why didn't Jacob say, no, I'll not do it. I served you for Rachel. I'm going to take Rachel. She's my wife. That's what I'm going to have. Don't you imagine he's thinking back about the deception he pulled on his old father back yonder, conscience hurting him, and he's saying, well, it comes back to me. Maybe that's what he's thinking. But he didn't, after that first sort of outburst, he didn't put up any kind of a fight there, a resistance, you'd think he would. Now, that raises some questions. If he had refused to take her, Leah, being deceived as he was, would you consider that a marriage? Personally, I wouldn't. I don't know what you think about it. I wouldn't consider him an adulterous man at all if he refused to take Leah and demanded Rachel. But I think I think two or three things show up here. First of all, maybe he was considered of Leah. Here in the presence of all of these people where the ceremony or whatever it was had been said in the feast. Now Leah would be terribly embarrassed. And so maybe he said, well, I deceived my father. I cheated my brother. I'll make the most of this. I'll take my medicine. I'll go ahead and keep Leah. All right? And at any rate, they fulfilled the week of this one, and Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife. So he worked for Leah, and then he got Rachel on a credit day. He did the 7 years of work there for her, but he got her at the end of the week there. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her handmaid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served him yet 7 other years. All right, and Jehovah saw that Leah was hated. Now that simply means less loved or slighted. And he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bare a son. She called his name Reuben, that is, see a son. And she said, because Jehovah has looked upon my affliction, or look a son, either one, for now my husband will love me. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, because Jehovah hath heard that I am hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, which means heard or hearing. Evidently she prayed to God, called upon God here, because her husband did slight her and not love her as he should. You'll never see happiness in a polygamous home. Not a polygamous home in the Bible in which there's happiness. Always distrust or opposition between these women here. Always. I think that was true of the Mormons. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore was his name called Levi. That means attached or attachment. He'll be attached to me. And she conceived again and bare a son, said, this time will I praise Jehovah. Therefore she called his name Judah. And she left off barren. And that word means praised. So each of these names here carry with it a significance. You see a son, or heard, having been heard, or attached to attachment. And the other one, praised. All right, then we move into others here, which we don't have time to. We'll stop at chapter 30 and take up there. In the fall when we come back and take this up. Let me just for a few moments now do a little bit of summarizing here, if I may, on this. Where am I? Just a moment. Let me try to see if you can find my... Don't think it's up there. Oh, I know. Preacher had it the other night. I'd forgotten. I knew John. He didn't use it, so I guess preacher used it the other night. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to go back now for just one moment before we leave and briefly review some of the things that we've been trying to keep before us throughout this study. We began back here with Adam and Eve. All right, now here were the 3 sons of Adam and Eve. There was Cain and Abel and Seth. All right, now here through Cain came wickedness. Those wicked individuals, the sons of God, went into the sons of men here. And I think the wickedness here came through this lineage. Right, Abel was killed. Right, then we come to Seth. Right, we follow Seth here as we come down to Noah. Right, and so here's Noah. And here's 3 sons here that we follow. Here were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Right, we leave Ham and Japheth. Japheth here is the father of the Gentiles. Ham is the father of the Canaanites and others. to leave him and follow Shem here. We come on down to Terah. Right, we come to Terah. Terah has three sons here. Nahor and Haran and Abraham. All right. Now, we leave these two and follow Abraham. We'll come over here and follow Abraham now. Here we follow Abraham. Abraham has the two sons, Isaac and Jacob. All right. Now, we leave Isaac over here and... Ishmael and Isaac. What am I thinking about? Ishmael and Isaac here. We leave Ishmael, and now then we follow Isaac. Isaac has the two sons, Esau and Jacob. Alright? Now, we leave Esau here, and we follow the generations of Jacob, the genealogy. Now, what we're trying to show in that and trying to keep before us is this, that all the way through the book of Genesis, what we are following is that promise back here of the seed of the woman, that the seed of the woman would bruise the head of the serpent would bruise his heel. We're following that. And so as we follow that, here we follow Seth and come to Noah, and through Noah we'll leave those and follow Shem to Terah. Here we have Nahor, Haran, and Abraham. We leave these and follow Abraham here, and Isaac, and Ishmael and Isaac. And we leave Ishmael, take Isaac, there's Esau and Jacob. We leave Esau to follow Jacob. Right now, here he has the 12 sons. And then in the 49th chapter, here we have the promise that in Judah, that the scepter would not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh cut. Alright, so here the tribes, we don't reject those tribes, but we're especially interested in following the tribe of Judah. Then we come to David, and we're interested in the family of David. And the Bible then keeps us in contact with the family of David until Jesus comes, born of the seed of the woman, and born of the seed of David. Now this is the major thought. Now, many other wonderful thoughts and things you want to notice in Genesis, a great book, but especially should we be concerned and concern ourselves with following now the seed of the woman, those individuals through whom the seed of the woman will ultimately come. Now, that's the real thought and the real theme there. All right. Anything else you want to ask or say? Let me count us here. Brother Norman, count them for me, will you? I'm sure you can count as high as 30 or maybe more. Well, that's it. All right. I didn't know it. I see if it's short. Count you and me? Do you count us? You're 32, and then two like a 34, is that right? So what'd you count, Lily? How many did you count? 34? That's good. Alright. That's good. Well, that's a mighty good class, and you've been a very consistent class all the way through, and we appreciate that very much. Best wishes to you. We hope to see you next fall. I'll be dropping in here in now and then for a week, but in the main, I'll be gone until next fall. 2 minutes. Got about 20, and I didn't want to hold but about 10. I wound up with 20, and we'll try to hold and come back home.